Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome into another edition of the Under Center podcast here on NBC Sports Chicago. I'm JJ Stankovic, joined as always by Paul Aspen and Cam Ellis. It's our usual Wednesday podcast. Right before we got on, Ian Rappaport of NFL Network reported the Bears released Deion Sims. That saves them about $6 million in cap space. It's something we've been expecting to happen.
Sure.
The Bears probably actually did Sims a favor by releasing him now, a little bit early before free agency starts. So, decent move, something we've expected. Nice of them to do it when they did. That's about it. Any other thoughts?
No, I mean, I couldn't really imagine a world where they weren't going to do this.
Exactly.
Right. It seems like they're hitting all their sort of, you know, predicted check marks so far, at least for the offseason.
Right. So we're going to use this podcast to start looking ahead to the NFL Combine, which, believe it or not, starts in a week.
Crazy.
I'll be in Indianapolis a week from Wednesday. Ryan Pace will be talking. Matt Nagy will be talking. The whole league will kind of converge on Indianapolis. We'll start hearing some rumors about free agency, at where Antonio Brown is going, Le'Veon Bell. The league year really kind of starts at the Combine. But we also haven't heard from Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy since that end-of-the-season press conference in January. So it'll be about a month and a half. So I want to start off with this. What questions do we have for Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy next week? What do you guys want to hear out of them in Indianapolis?
You want to just ping pong, like one and one? Or
yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So question number one for Pace. Start a little easy, but if we assume the championship window is open, what is your window? I don't think you're really going to get an answer. He'll talk around that, but I guess that would kind of, part two of that is what he might answer. How does that impact your draft philosophy
right. As
being a guy that's always gone best player available?
I'm wondering if they've maybe now had 6 weeks to sort of calm down about the kicking situation and not necessarily re-change what your plan is, but I'm interested where they are in that process of deciding what to do. Because I wonder, you know, tempers are hot immediately after the season ends, but there's a lot of money on the line even if they cut him. So I'm wondering what the last month, 6 weeks of conversations like that has been.
Yeah, I mean, specifically, I'd like to know, will Cody Parkey still be on the team when the new league year starts? And Ryan Pace is very good about talking around that stuff and not giving a direct answer because, totally fair, if he hasn't made the move yet, he doesn't need to say if he's going to make the move or not. I think the only instance where that happened was with Mike Glennon, where he basically was like, yeah, we're cutting him because everyone knew that was going to happen. A question I have, and this one's for Matt Nagy, is just, has the sting worn off? Because even in that end-of-the-year press conference, which was over a week after the season ended, he was pissed. Mm. I mean, you could just see it on his face. He was kind of almost writhing in just frustration that the Bears still weren't playing, that he wasn't using his Monday to start talking about a game against the New Orleans Saints. He was having to relive the Cody Parkey double doink and the failures that happened in that playoff game. So I'd like to know, has the sting worn off, and does he have more of a kind of clear-eyed, not necessarily clear-eyed, but neutral view now of what went wrong in that playoff game up to the Cody Parkey miss and what he kind of took away from it? I'm just kind of interested in that one.
So kind of off that, two different ones, but I'll throw this one out there now. So he owned the playoff play calling the Kansas City. It was one of the first things he did at his Bears press conference, owned the play calling in the Kansas City loss. Now, two playoff games in, you know, we saw his reaction when he was asked about Tariq Cohen. He's like, if you know, I want to get that guy the ball.
Right.
But BU, as Lawrence Holmes talked about recently in our grade segment, how would he evaluate himself on being you during with his play calling and being true to himself with that two playoff games in? And I guess where can he, was he happy with, okay with, and where does he think he needs to grow as well? Because like I said, one of our first impressions of Matt Nagy was, okay, this guy owns it. He realizes he's got to grow. And look, you're not going to be a complete coach after your first season.
Right.
I just would like to hear from him on that.
Yeah, I remember reading sometime a while back, I think it was still in Kansas City, that one of the Kansas City coaches was in charge of keeping track of the plays Nagy called to make sure it was not getting stale. And I'm curious whether he brought that position over, or is it someone's job in Chicago is to do that, and then sort of what they would have talked with him about, because like you said, I mean, that was the staleness, the creativity at times lagging was a big issue, and I'm wondering if that position exists within the Bears organization and what they thought about the season.
So I kind of want to read the tea leaves of whatever he says about what turned up when you did a deep dive into the run game and you watched all the film and you crunched everything. What turned up? I don't think we're going to get a direct answer of him saying, well, Jordan Howard sucked, or the offensive line sucked. Obviously, we're not going to get that. But what I think we could get is maybe just a couple of breadcrumbs that might lead us in the direction of where they could look at a running back, whether it's through the draft, whether it's through a free agent, whether it's through a trade. I do think that there might be a little something there between Pace and Nagy to see what their answers are, because they're talking in two different areas within 45 minutes of each other. So maybe they'll have their answers rehearsed, but they're not talking at the same time on the same podium. So I'm interested to see what both of them say about it, presuming that I can make it all the way from one end of the convention center to the other to be able to talk to both of them. Any last ones that you guys got?
I do have one more for Matt Nagy.
Okay.
So we saw the club dub thing. You know, he's talked to Joe Maddon a lot, kind of building off that, incorporating some similar sort of things around the team. And JJ, as you pointed out this past week when we were doing grades, he got the defense to buy into him, which is no small feat. Mm-hmm. So my question is, like, during a 12, like, not taking anything away, like, he got them to 12-4 during that season. You know, even someone like Jordan Howard, who probably wasn't happy with his role, bought it.
Yeah.
Yep.
So next season, how do you keep it fresh?
Yeah.
Like, we saw Joe Maddon do the magician thing. You can't do that 2 years in a row. Like, is club dub still a thing? If you're 7-5 going into December and you need to win two or three games to get into the playoffs and then you're not at 12-4, how does he keep it fresh? How does he keep these guys buying in? I mean, I think he's absolutely got the personality to. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering what he's got up his sleeve to change it. And, you know, I've said probably keep it fresh three times now, but to do that in year two.
Yeah, I mean, I think also a very valid question is how much will the Bears buy into it again? The locker room last year was, I think, as not covering a lot of locker rooms, but everyone kept talking about how tight they were.
Yes.
And I got the sense that it was an above average unit in regards to being close. So I'm interested to see if, you know, all of a sudden they're 3-3 again next year, if all of a sudden maybe the booms and the club dub stuff wears a little thin after some losses pile up.
Which is kind of what happened with the Cubs.
Yes,
with,
exactly.
Know, the bringing the Penguins in and the Magicians and all that, it kind of gets stale after a little while. So you do have to change what you're doing. All really good questions, all ones that I'm going to steal and maybe ask both of them next week. All right, I want to get into some talk about what Ryan Pace's strategy at the Combine should be, because, Paul, you made mention of it about, does Ryan Pace now shift away from we just got to get the best player available to, okay, we're now 12-4 and we're maybe two or three positions away from making it to the Super Bowl. So even if, say, you get into the fourth round and you have a fifth round grade on a running back, but you like the guy enough, do you just take him in the fourth round because you need a running back? Or do you stick with your board and say, you know what, okay, well, we may not need a defensive lineman, but well, we found Bilal Nichols last year, and in the fourth round, our scouts love this guy, so let's just go with him. I don't know if there's a right answer there. I think the right answer usually is sticking with your board and taking the best player available. But if you go into next season and you haven't fixed your run game and you only took a player in the sixth or seventh round and that guy doesn't work out, whereas maybe a guy who's available in the third round does pan out elsewhere, then that would raise some questions about how their strategy has worked out.
It's going to be tough to swallow if they take a defensive lineman in this scenario. And even if it's a lower fourth-round grade or a fifth-round grade, they're not going to care what anyone else outside the building thinks.
Right.
But I think you got to kind of swing for that running back there. I mean, I assume that they'll probably stick to their board because that's just what they've done. I mean, history points to that. But I think it would be absolutely understandable if they make a little bit of a reach for a running back in this situation.
I think minus, you know, Bryce Callahan and Amos signing contracts before the draft. It would be astounding if they took a defensive player with one of their first couple picks. And drafting is such a confusing art form in the sense that it's basically a dice roll. But I think the Bears are in a position where they don't necessarily need to take best player available. And I don't know. I go back and forth on whether that strategy is good or bad, but I think the Bears are in a position where, hey, we need a running back, so let's go get a fourth round running back. And the running backs are going to be there because of the current valuation within NFL right. offenses. So I think it, whether or not the strategy is right, it sort of lines up perfectly for the Bears to do what they need to do when they need to do it.
I think that's a good point about running backs being available. I'm got a podcast coming out next Monday with Josh Norris where – you know, you talk to anyone who covers the draft and they'll tell you that running backs always slide because teams just don't need them and they yeah. don't place that high of a value on them. So you have a guy who may be a second round talent who's available in the third round or a third round in the fourth round and you know, that line. I do think that last year when the Bears went into the draft and we all kind of assumed, okay, they're going to take an edge rusher at some point, right? Right? And then they took Joel Iwe-Buniwe with their fourth round pick, and it was like, okay, this is when they're going to do it. And they took another inside linebacker right. after already drafting an inside linebacker when they already had two inside linebackers who had started on their roster. So I'm not going to put it past Ryan Pace to stick to his board and say, you know what, we actually don't like any of these running backs, and we're just not going to throw away a pick on a guy who is like, maybe sort of a fit just to appease the fan base. Now, I understand if the Bears go through the whole draft and they haven't taken a running back, there's going to be, I mean, there will be a lot of questions for Ryan Pace, justifiably so. Maybe, and this is also assuming they haven't done anything beforehand right. of acquiring someone. But
To that point real quick, I just wonder, like, in the first round, like, obviously, you know, never being inside a draft room, but you can imagine, like, probably the excitement, the suspense, right. like, everything that's coming with that. I wonder if that mentality will be in the Bears room in the third round. Just having not,
right.
like, having had a pick in the first couple rounds. I just wonder what the dynamic will be like in that room.
Yeah.
I sort of don't have any new insights on this. I agree. I think it would be – I think the Bears have such a clear need, and it's actually kind of a silver lining because the Bears aren't in a position where they necessarily need the best player available. There are yeah. a lot of teams that, oh, shoot, we have some good wide receivers, but we're drafting third overall, so we're just going to take this potentially Pro Bowl wide receiver, whatever
right.
position it may be.
Right.
The Bears have the luxury of not having the pressure of hitting on a very high draft round pick mm-hmm. while at the same time knowing what they need to get.
I think that's a really good point because the Bears – a year ago, our own John Moon Mullen had reported that they were really high on Denzel Ward. And this is after they splashed a ton of money to keep Prince Mukamara and Kyle Fuller. But they're still in that building phase where if we think this guy's an all-pro corner, we got to go get him.
Yeah.
And obviously Denzel Ward was not available when they picked eighth. But I just thought that was another that kind of lends credence to your point, Cam, that, look, teams that are drafting in the top 10, top half of the draft kind of have to do that. Whereas, you know, maybe if you're toward the end of the draft, the Patriots could take Sony Michel, for instance. He probably was not the 32nd best player or 31st best player in the draft.
Right.
But he filled a need for them, and they went on and won the Super Bowl because they had, in part because they had Sony Michel.
Yep.
So that is kind of the balance the Bears are going to have to strike here. You just can't reach so far away from your draft board because that's when you get in trouble and that's when you wind up with like Shea McClellan yeah. or you know,
I'm trying to think of draft busts now.
What was the safety Harden, what was his name, the fact that I can't even remember the guy's
yeah,
name.
Yeah, he was
a third round pick a couple years ago is pretty telling.
But the Bears have more real estate, and I think the Bears fans are going to be a little more understanding of a reach than maybe a different fan base would be
right.
because of the position they're
right.
in.
Right. I think actually maybe the point on those last drafts I mentioned is that it was Phil Emery's draft board that was doing the drafting, so it might not have been very good. We can say we trust Ryan Pace's draft board because he's
yeah.
hit on quite a few mid-round picks. That's where the Bears are going to have to hit in this year's draft. And hey, the Combine, for all the interest in the Combine and everyone freaking out about 40 times and bench press reps, I think for the Bears, a lot of it obviously is athletic and kind of in the spark testing and all that. But a lot of it also goes into the interviews. And, you know, what did the what will the Bears glean from these in-person interviews that they get to have at the Combine? Because they're not only going to be meeting with running backs, but probably some edge rushers, kickers almost certainly. And, you know, there are a number of different positions that they're going to go in. And if you display good football knowledge, that's something that's not going to show up on tape, that's not going to show up in your testing. But that also is something that can translate if you're a fourth or fifth round pick and you say, you know, you sit down and you get some film in front of you, you can diagnose exactly what happened in front of you. That's going to stand out almost just as much, if not more, than some of the testing that goes on at the Combine.
Go ahead.
I just feel bad for whoever they pick in the fourth round because he's got to be an all pro, right? You got a back up. Right. I was like, you got some big shoes to fill.
So it's funny that you mentioned the meetings because, like, so Matt Nagy met with Trubisky at the Combine a couple of years ago when he was with the Chiefs.
Yep.
He kind of wrote him off.
Yep.
And then they brought him in and he was blown away. I wonder, I hate to put such an emphasis on the kicker position, but assuming you meet with some of these guys, would you go to the point of bringing some of those guys to Chicago just to get a deeper dive into their psyche? Is that doing too much?
I don't know if that's, well, I don't know. I mean,
I just thought of it now. I mean,
I do think you can probably get what you need at the Combine when it comes to that. But I also think we're talking about, you know, a kicker. We're probably talking about a sixth or seventh round pick at best.
Right. And you're going to have so much more of a field of guys you're probably bringing in anyway, whether undrafted free agents or anything.
Right. So I do think, too, that, you know, we'll get more clarity on that depending on what they do in free agency with the kicker position. Which is where I actually want to start the second half of this podcast. So we're going to take a break here on the Under Center podcast and be right back with you here on NBC Sports Chicago.
For monster coverage of the monsters of the Midway, download the My Teams app by NBC Sports. Keep the Bears at your fingertips every day of the week. Download the app today.
All right, JJ, Paul, and Cam back here on the Under Center podcast. Robbie Gould's probably not coming to Chicago. The NBC Sports Bay Area's Matt Maiocco put it out there this week that the 49ers are almost certain to franchise him. That makes sense. The 49ers don't really have anyone else to franchise. They have a lot of cap space. You want to keep your kicker position stable, and Robbie Gould is about as stable as they come. So you're willing to pay the $5-ish million to keep him around, but that does mean the Bears will not be having a reunion with Robbie Gould unless it's the next time the 49ers come to the playoffs.
I'm not anti-Robbie. I just didn't think it really made sense.
Right, yeah.
All things considered. Yeah, I think we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but, I mean, it's – I understand the appeal. I mean, 82 out of 85. You can't really argue with that.
Sure.
I don't know that it was necessarily the best way to go for this team, especially considering the recent history. Anyway, I think the mass tryout, for lack of a better word, whether it's undrafted free agents, at this point, if you had to put a gun to my head, yeah, I'd use one of the picks, sixth or seventh round, on a kicker, and bring in some guys that are, you know, journeymen as well. And just, you know, you're not going to have a competition during the season, but just let them all compete all the way through. As Alex Brown was talking about in the green room one time, like him, Briggs, these guys, they'd be throwing water bottles, they'd be throwing towels, they'd be throwing stuff at Robbie as he was kicking in practice. Like, do all that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Whatever works.
Yeah, put it all out there.
Put him through the gauntlet.
Yeah. And I think people were all like, hey, Robbie Gould could come back, like, if the money works and they don't mind spending. Like, I don't think you ever do that for kickers, right? Like, you know, like, if it's at a point where you're saying the kicker could come here if you move all this money around and don't mind spending a lot, like, you don't do that for a kicker. I thought it was also kind of funny that Gould's contracts wishes were long-term contract at good money on a winning team. Like, yeah, man, that'd be great. It's like, we'd all like that. It's silly, but like,
I too, like Manny Machado, would like to sign the biggest contract in American pro sports history to go live in San Diego.
Right.
The Bears haven't drafted a kicker since 2000. That was Paul Edinger. Before that, Kevin Butler was a draft pick. But look, I think the Bears can find someone, even if it's, you know, a seventh-round pick plus an undrafted free agent, plus Redford Jones, plus maybe another free agent. I mean, there are so many options here. I just think that you can probably cast too wide of a net. There are only so many people who can hold and snap at Hallis Hall. But at the same time, you kind of need to make this pretty wide to start out and then narrow it by the time training camp rolls around.
And to the draft point, I mean, it's even looking at the last 2 years, it is such an inexact science.
Yeah.
Completely. Daniel Carlson, fifth-round pick of the Vikings, he didn't last a month into the season in Minnesota, and now he's sticking with the Raiders.
Yeah.
He rebounded pretty quickly there. Jason Sanders, saw him against the Bears. He did what Cody Parkey could not do.
Right.
Going back 2 years ago, Jake Elliott started off shaky, but eventually figured it out. And then Harrison Butker never made it with the Panthers, but he's landed
Chiefs.
With the Chiefs. Thank you. You know, so.
Well, and I mean, I remember, was it last year, thinking, oh, Zane Gonzalez, who this guy, you know, he looks good. Two years ago, yeah, and he bombed out with the
Browns.
Yeah, or you could have the dumbest pick of a kicker, which was Roberto Aguayo.
That's what I was going to say. He was the next greatest kicker of all time.
Exactly.
Right.
So, yeah, you can have the next greatest kicker of all time, use a second-round pick on him, and he's bumping around Bears training camp in 2017 for some reason. So, lastly here, our colleague John Moon Mullen, he wrote a story this week where he was kind of talking about the Bears having other options than the draft to add a running back. And he floated this out there, which is something that it makes sense, that maybe they could send a pick to the Browns for Duke Johnson or Nick Chubb, given that Kareem Hunt was just brought in by Cleveland. I don't think Nick Chubb is really likely, just because, I mean, Kareem Hunt's not going to play until at least sometime in the second half of the season.
Right.
But Duke Johnson, though, is interesting. He's a guy who does a pretty decent pass-catching trait. He's averaged about 9 yards per reception in his career. Last year, he caught 47 passes for 429 yards. And he carries with him a $3.05 million cap hit in 2019, so something that's palatable for the Bears. What do we think here? I mean, Duke Johnson's probably not worth anything more than maybe a 6th or 7th round pick. It shouldn't cost you a lot to get him. And if he winds up being a bust, you can cut him without a whole lot of dead cap. So to me, that when Moon put that out there, I was kind of like, that's a really interesting idea. I don't know if he's the solution for your kind of between the tackles run game,
right?
But he's at least a solution where if he's on the field, defenses aren't going to be like, well, they're definitely running the ball like they did with Jordan Howard, or they're probably passing the ball like they did with Tariq Cohen.
Yeah, I think my thing is I get, you know, the money stuff makes it an appealing situation. Do the Bears need a pass-catching back? I don't quite see that. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tariq Cohen's so – I thought he was the best player on offense this year.
I don't disagree.
I get that maybe you want three running backs, and maybe that helps mix up – you're right in that when Jordan Howard's on the field, they're running the ball, and I definitely get that. I think that's maybe more of a play-calling issue than a personnel issue.
Right.
So I don't know. I guess I get it. I don't see if the Bears are going to make a trade for a running back if they would do it for a pass-catching back who has pretty abysmal – between the tackle numbers.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking Chubb,
for sure.
But to your point, when I saw the Duke Johnson name, I was like, okay, intriguing, but not, I don't know if it fixes,
right,
you know, what you need to fix. And to JJ's point, I mean, I was doing a little reading on Cleveland.com. People are talking about, would, you know, you be able to get a 2 or 3 for Duke Johnson? I was like, if I'm the Browns, he's on his way to the airport. I don't care if Kareem Hunt's not you know, coming back till December. But no, like a 6th or 7th.
They call Oakland, maybe.
Might as well.
You know, maybe Raiders as well. Duke Johnson, the only year where he had over 100 rushing attempts is 2015, his rookie year. He averaged 3.6 yards per carry. Granted, we're talking about the Browns.
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, yeah, I mean, his overall profile doesn't seem to scream this fixes the running game.
Right.
But I also think in this instance, you probably do need to cast somewhat of a wide net. Is that worth committing $3 million to a guy when you only have $12 million-ish in cap space right now? I don't know. But you got to find a fix for this, and if they like the guy.
I mean, if you're waiting until around the draft, you got a better idea of what kind of shape you're in cap was.
I guess if you get to the draft and you haven't figured out, let's say you get to maybe the day before the draft and you haven't signed a free agent running back and you kind of feel pretty lukewarm on everyone else available – maybe you go ahead and try to convince the Browns that he's, you know, a 6th round pick is a good return for him. But I do think generally I'm interested in the Bears potentially trading a draft pick for a running back instead of using the draft pick on a running back, just because you have to maximize these next 2 years of Mitch Trubisky's rookie deal. And if you feel like a guy is more of a sure thing by trading for him than drafting someone, then I think you go ahead and do that.
Either way, you're burning a pick on a running back.
Exactly.
It's the same thing.
It's just more money.
I think organizations are either in a state of wanting to acquire as many draft picks as they can because they're rebuilding. But when you're not rebuilding, send those draft picks out. Get players that are going to help you win now, to your point about windows. And I think the Bears are more in that latter group than the former. It's not saying you should go trade all of your draft picks, but if there's a between-the-tackle style downhill running back that can be had for a six-round pick, you go get him right now, I think.
So next week on the Under Center podcast on Monday, I did an interview with Josh Norris that's going to run on Monday, the RotoWorld / NBC draft expert. He threw out a lot of names at running back that I think are really intriguing. Just a quick preview, go look up James Williams from Washington State, a guy with a real cool name, Divine Ozigbo from Nebraska. He did not get a combine invite. He rushed for over 1,000 yards last year, though.
Wow.
Devin Singletary from Florida Atlantic.
Yep.
Just, you know, a couple interesting names to throw out there. Mel Kiper yesterday on a conference call with him, I asked him about some running backs that could interest the Bears. He threw out Miles Sanders, Benny Snell as two names. Those guys probably would be, you know, Benny Snell's probably a third-round pick. But, you know, he fits that between the tackles guy. I don't know if he can be much of a pass catcher. But some real good stuff in here from Josh Norris that you should keep an eye out for about what traits translate over from college to the NFL that can make a guy a good pass catcher, even if he didn't do it in college. So definitely something to keep an eye out for there. And then next week, we'll have plenty of stuff coming to you from the Combine. Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy are talking. Plenty of stuff there, and then we're going to start diving into the draft a little bit because, my God, you can never have too much draft content.
I love the Josh Norris gems. Throws out names that you just, like, barely even heard of.
Yeah.
Divine Ozigbo is probably my favorite one that I've ever got.
There's a guy, Wes Hills, but it was not all that unique of a name, but he's from Slippery Rock, which is apparently a college. I saw it literally like 2 seconds. I was like, oh, Slippery Rock, that's cool. Did I steal their name?
Yes.
Nice. Cam Ellis gets credit for that name. So there we go, Slippery Rock. That's what I'm rooting for.
Yeah, I like him, and he's also, you know, transferred from Delaware, so Nagy could make a phone call there, be like, I mean, he transferred from there. He might not get the best review.
Right.
Miles Gaskin from Washington.
Washington, I like him a lot.
You know, and one thing we didn't get to, but just quickly to touch on it, you know, with as far as the combine goes, I kind of like the idea that we can concentrate a little bit more on specific position groups instead of it just being like, you know, spraying to all fields sort of deal.
Yeah, like, wow, Quentin Nelson tested really well, and so did a bunch of inside linebackers.
Right.
Yeah, right. I mean, at the combine, I know my focus is pretty much only going to be on running backs, and I don't really care what a kicker bench is, so, I mean, I don't know.
I would say that I care a lot about what a kicker bench is. I want my swole kickers.
Swole Kickers was the name of my band at we're going to end it on that here on the Under Center podcast. Stick with us next week. I've got that interview with Josh Norris coming out on Monday, and we'll have plenty of stuff coming to you from the Combine in Indianapolis next week. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you later.